Hello, college football fans. The season is kicking off this week, which means there's going to be plenty of big plays, big wins, and big revenue for teams around the country. As most fans know, football is one of the primary drivers to college athletics department's revenue. Hi, I'm Chris Baisden, an editor with the Journal of Accountancy. To celebrate the new season, we thought it would be fun to talk about how a CPA might go about trying to conduct a valuation of a college football team. Of course, we know that you can't really value a team due to the way they're set up within universities. But if you were going to try to do that, how might you go about it? And what would be the pluses and minuses of that approach? So that's what we're going to talk about today after a quick word from our sponsor.
Running a business is rarely simple, but earning rewards can be. With the Chase Inc. Business Unlimited card, earn unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase for whatever your business needs. Restrictions and limitations apply. Offer subject to change. Cards are issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank and a member FDIC.
Welcome back. My guests today are Mark Zyla, a CPA ABV and the Managing Director of Zyla Valuation Advisors in Atlanta. We also have with us Daniel Cohen, an attorney at Nelson Mullins in Atlanta, who works with educational institutions and their athletics departments. Dan and Mark, it's good to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
So athletics departments are big businesses, but they're run differently than most businesses. Can you give us an overview of how they operate from a revenue and expense perspective? How are they similar? And maybe more importantly, how are they different from other types of businesses?
Well, this is Dan Cohen. I'll start by talking about some of the differences, and then I'll turn it over to Mark to talk about some of the similarities. But Chris, as you already indicated, these college football programs are parts of higher education institutions, so there are some very fundamental differences. If we were to try to look at individual teams, because a college football program is going to be fairly similar in its end product and its skill level to an NFL team, that may be the easiest analogy to make in the fans' eyes, but at a very fundamental level, individual college football teams are not standalone operating entities. Teams are members of athletic departments, which in turn are parts of higher education institutions whose mission is to educate the citizenry. And when we're looking at the biggest programs, the Power Five programs, for the most part, those are public entities, which means that they are parts of the state. So the mission is to educate students, not necessarily put on a for-profit entertainment option for fans. So that sets up some very, very fundamental differences from the way that they operate. For the most part, college football programs don't try to make positive net generated revenues. Athletic departments don't. Generally, they try to break even. The NCAA used to publish reports on this. The last one was put out in 2017. And it showed at that point that only 24 of the FBS Power Five athletic departments actually had positive net generated revenues. As we then pivot towards football programs, among the Power Five programs, only 70 of them had revenues greater than expenses as of this last 2017 published report, while 59 had revenues that were less than expenses. It's fairly similar statistics as we look at men's basketball programs. 61 of them, as of this last NCAA report, had revenues greater than expenses, while 68 had revenues that were less than expenses. But even if we look at those programs that are so-called profitable, again, that's not consistent with their educational mission. So if you look at some of the schools with the biggest positive net generated revenues, Georgia, Texas, Nebraska, Purdue, what they tend to do is that they put those positive net generator revenues back into the higher education institution. Nebraska has done some great work in this area. They have a commitment where they are going to send $10 million at least back to the other side of campus on an annual basis. So last year, Nebraska actually offered 4,000 students Husker Scholars money. That was funded by the athletic department, which meant that 20% of the undergraduate students on the main side of campus received some form of Husker scholarship that was funded by the athletic department. So I think that's a pretty fundamental difference in the way that these programs operate within the higher education industry. So having set out some of the differences, let me turn it over to Mark to talk about some of the similarities.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So like most business enterprises, athletic departments, particularly college football programs, keep track of revenues and expenses. So at the heart of a valuation, it's how much cash flow, positive cash flow that the enterprise actually generates for the university. And so one can look at that data as it's regularly reported and draw some conclusions about the contribution of overall value. So from a an operating standpoint or a valuation standpoint, that's the primary similarity between a football program and a traditional operating business. In addition to some of the differences, though, that Dan mentioned, the mission of the university, most programs typically don't operate at a profit. And also the data, as reported, there are some variances in types of information, how the entities may report data, what they consider revenue. So it may fluctuate from year to year. So there's some challenges one would encounter when looking at trying to put a place of value on the college program.
So let's talk a little bit about the major sources of revenue. What are they? You know, I'm thinking tickets and TV deals are probably for football and men's basketball, maybe some apparel sponsorships, maybe even booster money that might go towards scholarships. Can one of you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the biggest categories, in addition to what you mentioned as far as ticket sales and so on, contributions are considered revenue, and that's one difference between a valuation of a athletic department or a football program compared to an operating business. So for example, corporate contributions, naming rights, television and licensing rights also contribute to overall revenue. And each of those categories may change from year to year. So there are certain universities, if you look over time, lead in revenue, but there's in some years there may be outliers. So for example, in 2006, the highest revenue is reported to the NCAA that the USA Today, which has been tracking some of this data, Oklahoma State reported revenue of $241 million, which was a tremendous outlier. And a lot of that revenue, about 211 of it, came from contributions because they were renovating Boone Pickett Stadium, but they include as revenue. So as comparison, this year, they only included recorded revenue of $88 million, which is more of a normalized number. So part of the overall valuation process is trying to normalize what actual revenue is.
What about the major expenses? Scholarships are certainly going to be one of those. Also, facilities costs, as you already mentioned. Would those be some of the major expenses? What might be some of the rest?
Coaching salaries, both current and in a lot of cases, they're paying salaries of coaches that are no longer with their program. It is a very significant expense. Some other expenses might be guarantees to pay other schools. So, for example, if the University of Georgia is playing Georgia Southern or something, as an example, they may pay them a fee to play them in a football game. And so that's an expense. Travel, equipment, uniforms, marketing costs, medical insurance and expenses. They often reimburse universities for use of university assets. Is another example of a fairly large expense.
And this is Dan. Since the NCAA's deregulation in 2015, we've seen a significant increase in expenses related to student-athlete health, safety, and welfare issues. So that would be everything from the provision of the employment of additional medical and athletic trainers to the provision of nutritionists and healthy food that you may find in fueling stations in every locker room for every team.
So in a past journalism job, I did some reporting on athletics department's finances. And back then, I found it hard to compare department's numbers in an apples-to-apples kind of way. Is that still true? And if so, why?
Yeah, that is still true. That was the beauty of those old NCAA reports. They did at least try to do comparisons on an apples-to-apples basis based on the data. But even then, the NCAA would not release that data to the public. Like I said before, the last NCAA publication was in 2017. So now we're forced to look at sources such as the USA Today, which relies on open records requests to collect its data, annual EADA reports, which are Equity in Athletics Disclosure Act reports that are publicly available. Schools are required to provide that information to the Department of Education every October. But with both of those data sources, EADA and what USA Today has been able to compile, they tend to include allocated revenues within their calculations. And allocated revenues are revenues that are allocated by the institution to the athletics department. So we're talking about direct institutional support, we're talking about indirect support, depending on whether a school counts maintenance costs or insurance costs under the university umbrella or the athletic department umbrella. Allocated revenues often include student fees, they may include direct governmental support, things like that. That's really where you're getting your apples and your oranges. And so, but because of this allocation of institutional revenue sources, the result is that most institutions try to report that they roughly break even, even if they, from an athletic department standalone basis, would be actually looking at losing money. But so the effect of this institutional support is to disguise what the athletic department itself is truly generating when you're looking at some of these public sources like the EADA or the USA Today reports. But like I said before, even at that, colleges generally are reporting within their athletics dollars, their athletics-generated revenues, things like donor contributions, as Mark said. The last NCAA report from 2017 said that donor contributions accounted for roughly 23 to 24% of all athletic department-generated revenues. So that tends to disguise the numbers even further. Greg McGarrity of the University of Georgia, I think it was just last week, came out with a discussion of the USA Today's financial report. And at first blush, it would look like UGA had a very healthy athletic department, and it does. But the math, as reported by USA Today, was $176 million in total revenue and $133 million in total expenses. But as you dive into the numbers, the expenses excluded money paid out for construction on a stadium project and other facilities upgrades. And of the $176 million in revenue, $67 million of that came from donor contributions. So as you really dive into the numbers, you see where there are so many differences in the ways that individual schools can and do report individual categories that it clouds what the true situation looks like as you go from school to school to make apples to apples comparisons.
So let's talk a little bit about valuation. Mark, you're a valuation specialist. If you were going to try to value a college football team, how would you go about doing that?
Sure. Well, let's just briefly overview the three basic approaches to value and go from there. Typically, when you're valuing a business or real estate or other types of property, there are three main ways to approach it. One is a market approach, where you look at comparable businesses either from publicly traded information or recent acquisitions. A second approach might be a cost approach, where you replicate the cost to create that particular entity. And then the third major approach is income or a cash flow approach, where one would look at the cash flow that the entity generates as an indication of value.
So, Mark, just to jump in, it seems like one of those approaches is obviously not going to work since you don't have any kind of comparable sales to compare to. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. So about the three approaches, the market approach generally is not going to work because football programs are part of a university and they're not actively traded. So that leaves us with a cost approach and an income approach. The cost approach might lend itself more to valuation of certain assets. For example, if a football program builds a new practice facility, that would indicate the value of that particular asset, but it wouldn't lend itself well to value the overall program. So that leaves us with the income approach, and which is the value is based on the amount of cash flow that the actual program generates. So one can look at the data as reported to the NCAA and look at the cash flow that the program is generating and base a valuation on that data.
What are the pluses and minuses of that approach?
Well, the plus is that cash flow is tangible. You can look and see, here's what we're actually, the profit, the cash flow that we're generating. So that lends itself really well to concluding an overall value contribution to the university. The minus is, as Dan was indicating, that as the data that's reported varies from year to year. So in some years, for example, there may be large number of donations for whatever reason. And that may distort the data in 1 year. So one would have to look at a normalization across time. There are certain universities, University of Texas, Ohio State, that tend to have revenues that lead in revenues and thus overall valuations over time. But there are other universities where they may have a lot of contributions in a particular year that may look like they have a lot of value, but it's just an anomaly because of that 1 year. So the disadvantage is how data is reported. So one would have to cull through that and then normalize the data over time to get a true indication of the cash flow generating ability. Another area of valuation that we haven't touched on, though, we've talked about cash flow and the athletic departments, most are operating at a loss, but we haven't touched on the value that perhaps they bring to the university. Dan and I were discussing the other day about a phenomenon that is termed as the Doug Flutie effect, which is there are studies that show that if you have a successful athletic program, it enhances the prestige of your university, it enhances the number of applicants and the quality of applicants. So there's a reference that athletic departments, particularly football programs, are considered the front porch of a university, that they add value, intangible value to the process.
Dan, is that something that in your work with athletics departments, is that something that they talk about a lot, or do they not really pay attention to that?
No, absolutely. That's a very recognized phenomenon with respect to building a sense of community among the student body. It's something to rally around every Saturday in the fall, and once you turn to basketball season, twice a week. So the sense of continuity and community that can be built through a successful athletic department, or even if you're not having success, at least a high-quality entertainment product does lead to a better student experience, which in turn can lead to more applicants. And as you have more applicants, you can be more selective with who you select for admission among the applicants, which in turn can raise the academic profile and success of your overall academic mission. So that's why most universities see athletics as an investment, not as a profit source, but rather as an investment for the good of the overall academic community.
So, Mark, I know there's been a lot of talk in recent years about should college athletes be paid? Should they be paid, more than what they're getting from the scholarships? Without asking you to take a position on that, can you just talk a little bit about how that would change the calculus of how much a program might be worth compared to a pro football team, for instance?
Well, the data suggests, most recent NCAA data, that on average, per a male student athlete in a football program, that the expense for the athlete in terms of scholarships, in terms of medical costs, in terms of nutrition, equipment, and so on, is about $181,000 per year. And so there's a significant investment already in the student athlete without paying a salary. So as far as the overall valuation, if one were to say just hypothetically to pay a stipend to a student athlete, obviously that would increase their expenses. As far as overall valuation, if as expenses increase, the overall value would decline over time. One would also have to look at whether programs can afford to do that or not. And Dan had mentioned, I think there's only 41 of the programs that are actually showing a profit. So there are only a limited number of programs that actually could afford to pay students, or they would have to find other sources of revenue.
Yeah, and this is Dan. I'll jump in for just a second on this one with a bit of a legal answer. Higher education institutions are subject to Title IX, so which is a gender equity federal statute. So if college athletic programs were to begin paying, say, college football players, they would also have to make similar investments with respect to their female student athletes. And so the costs would not be just the single time cost of, how much do we pay a given football player or a team, but rather we'd be looking at something akin to doubling those expenses. the alternative would be to carve a football program or a basketball program out of the athletic department in order to avoid the expenses that would come along with Title IX compliance. And if we were to carve a football program out of an athletic department, you can probably count on all of those intangible benefits also going away. As I mentioned before, the University of Georgia, of their $176 million revenue, $67 million of it last year came from donations. We don't typically think about giving donations to Home Depot or to the New York Giants or to any other professional entity. So you would have to imagine that if we carved out football programs in order to get around Title IX and only pay football players, we would also lose all of those or many of those other flows of cash that come into athletic departments.
So you guys mentioned the Flutie effect a little earlier. I was going to ask, how might winning a national championship impact a school's valuation? And when you talk about that, can you talk a little bit more about the Flutie effect, what it is? Obviously, it's from Doug Flutie, a very famous college football quarterback. But can you talk a little bit about the Flutie effect and how a national championship might impact evaluation?
Sure. There was actually a study that tried to quantify the effect of success on the athletic from an athletic program on the university itself. And it was a study that was done by Doug Chung of the Harvard Business School. And he termed it the Flutie effect, and it's based on the famous 1984 game where Flutie scored the winning touchdown on a Hail Mary pass with 6 seconds left in the game. The impact from this particular study is that Boston College, where Flutie attended, in the 2 years after that football game, they saw applications increase 30%. So it piqued this Professor Chung's interest. So he did a study, and he determined that when an athletic department, particularly a football program, is successful, and he just termed it generally from mediocre to great, that the schools see a rise in applications on average about 17.7%. And it's not only the number of applications, but the quality of students measured by SAT scores also increased. So the success on the athletic field translates into more applications, typically probably a higher quality student, more academic success student, and increased donations.
We've also seen that more recently with the likes of Villanova with its basketball success. We've seen it with the University of Alabama with respect to its academic applications. And certainly a school like Butler University, which many people probably hadn't heard of prior to 2010, but then they made a run to the national championship game in two consecutive years, and now Butler's on the map nationally. So this certainly is a phenomenon that has an effect. Success on the field or on the court does lead to increased interest, not just in the athletic program, but also in the academic program.
Mark, is there the information out there to do a proper evaluation of college football programs? Could you do it in such a way and rank them so that people could really get a good comparison?
Yeah, I think it's probably more fair to say you can look at information that's provided that's required to be made publicly available. It used to be the NCAA compiled that information and placed it on their website, but as we were discussing earlier, the last data was from 2016. So one would have to go university by university to get that publicly available information that doesn't appear to be compiled directly by the NCAA. But you could use that to perform a basis of evaluation, but you'd have to delve in a little bit deeper in terms of what that data means. What's the details behind the revenues and expenses that are presented in the data? But one can generally do that. It would be compiling a lot of information. The USA Today does that, and they have an annual ranking of evaluation of college football programs based on data that they're able to compile.
And Dan, I'm wondering, you talk to athletic departments, what do they think of these rankings? Do they think they're fairly accurate, or do they generally think that they're, you know, off the mark?
Well, I think in a general sense, they're accurate in regard to reporting or giving a picture of how much revenue may be generated. To one of your earlier questions, though, it really is an apples to oranges comparison, and so the rankings per se, I think, are pretty much universally recognized as being inaccurate because of those different categorizations. But on a snapshot basis, you know, Texas is ranked number one by the USA Today in terms of its profitability. Does the University of Texas generate a lot of revenue? Absolutely. So that it's accurate insofar as you get a snapshot of how healthy a program is, but whether or not it is ranked number one at the end of the day, if you were able to compare apples to apples, it'd probably be towards the top, but would it be number one? I don't know. So it's a good indicator of health and revenue generation, but probably not on a comparison or on a ranking basis.
Thanks, Mark and Dan, and thanks so much for our audience for listening today.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.